Organic chemistry today. Boy, you'll be thinking ahead a little bit. Check out the word polymer in encyclopedias, or find an organic chemistry book or a book on plastics. And check out this word polymer, because we're going to talk about that. This all still relates to our corn oil. It's taking a long time for me to get that thing squared away. Here's a word to check out. Like I say, plastics. I guess some organic chemistry book. Or look at encyclopedias. You can also look under polyethylene, which is a polymer, or polyvinyl chloride. These things would be classified as polymers, and there are an awful lot more of them. You might want to read about rubber, which is a polymer. But those are some key words that you might use in just rummaging around, looking for general information about the things that we call polymers.
Could it be polyvinyl alcohol?
That's also a polymer.
Yeah, but is it a liquid or a solid?
It depends. It can be either depending on the length of the chain, the molecular weight. Polyvinyl. Vinyl. I always forget whether the Y goes there or the I goes there. I probably have it backwards. Maybe it's the Y both places. I don't know.
No, the Y is
polyvinyl alcohol. Starch. Oh, what are some other polymers we deal with in our everyday life? Lots of trade names.
Is cellulose a polymer?
Yes, cellulose is a polymer. Cellulose.
So then cell walls would be made out of polymer?
What's that?
Cell walls.
Cell walls are polymeric substances. Complicated ones.
What's the difference between organic and inorganic?
Well, the difference between inorganic and organic chemistry is not clear cut. But in general, organic chemistry is the chemistry of carbon compounds. Just the one element carbon. And those carbon compounds usually are compounds which contain hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen. Now, I think I told you, maybe I didn't, that the word organic came from the belief in the early days of chemistry that things we call organic chemicals, organic compounds, could only be made by living organisms. And now we know that that's not true. Now, I think that maybe there are some really complex compounds that can only be made, well, I know that, at the present state of things, some truly complex proteins and amino acids and other things cannot be made by man. They have to be made by other living things. But in the early days, they thought simple things like urea, which is excreted in the urine, could only be made by living things. In fact, urea was the first organic substance that was synthesized by man from an inorganic starting material. It was synthesized by a German chemist by the name of, I believe it was Buhler, from ammonium isocyanate. Ammonium isocyanate which is an inorganic compound. And all he did was to let this stand in air, and it became oxidized by the air and formed urea. Let's see if I can remember the formula for urea. I'm not sure. I better not stick my neck out. It's a simple compound. I've forgotten what the formula for it is. Well, for today, I want to talk about functional groups, teaching you still more organic chemistry. I have already introduced you to one functional group, the hydroxyl group. And remember, we put this group on various hydrocarbons from which, in place of one of the hydrogens. And then we had a thing that we called an alcohol. All right, so here's hydrogen, which we don't really consider a functional group. And it can be, you see, on any hydrocarbon, and that hydrogen can be replaced by OH. It can be replaced by NH2. Now, NH2 would be like this. Nitrogen tends to form three bonds to substances, whereas carbon tends to form four bonds. Nitrogen is satisfied when it has three, is bonded to three other things. Jeff?
The ammonium hydroxide. How are the hydrogens bonded up?
Well, there are four in that case. But there is a charge on this ion, as you know, Jeff, a positive charge. I'm not telling you all of the exceptions, and I won't give you many exceptions. I'll try and give you the broad general rules in this course, at least here in the beginning. So I'm not telling you too big a fib by saying that usually nitrogen just bonds to three other substances. We haven't gotten around to the electronic structure of atoms yet. We'll get to that sort of business later on. This group is called the, this is a myth, isn't it? Amine, sorry. This is the amine group. This is the amine functional group. All right, now, there are some groups that get kind of complicated. And here is one, usually written as COOH. That's called the carboxylic. It's an O. Acid group. Usually shortened in the talk of organic chemists to just say that's the acid group. Now, that is more complicated than that. The carbon is double bonded to an oxygen, and out here there is a hydroxyl group. Now, some of you, the first day we were here, mentioned double bonds between carbon atoms. We call that an unsaturation. So let me detour a minute and get on to that. Let's write ourselves hydrocarbon here on the board. That's that. Okay, now that is just a straight chain hydrocarbon. What would we call that one?
Hexane.
That's hexane. Now, it's possible to remove two hydrogens, make that just one hydrogen there and one hydrogen there, and put in a double bond. Now, in this shorthand way of writing things, you may get confused, so let me draw that same hexane out like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's a little better representation, you see, spread out like that. Although this does not show the kinks in this chain that arise because these bonds to the central carbon atom are tetrahedral. This is an organic chemist's way of shortening things up. All right, now if I take out two adjacent hydrogens of a hydrocarbon, then I will have a double bond in there. That is, there are two bonds between two carbons instead of one bond. That's what I have shown here in a little more shorthand-like notation. It's just understood that this bond is not to that hydrogen, it's to that carbon. But just for speed in writing, you just put the hydrogens in like that. What that H2 means is that it's like this. Do you understand that? It's just additional shorthand. Now this is said to be an unsaturated hydrocarbon when we have double bonds. Now you cannot have a double bond adjacent to another double bond as a rule. You have to go through a single bond. Then over here we could do the same thing. We could remove, and there are ways of doing this, those two hydrogens producing a double bond there. So I'll erase those hydrogens and put a double bond there. Now there are two double bonds along that chain. Now those bonds could be in other positions. I could have had a double bond here, a single bond here, a double bond there, a single bond here, and then a double bond there. If I had a double bond on the end, I would have a CH2CH, and then on to C to something else. Now it's even possible to have a triple bond. If I take off these two hydrogens, then I could have a triple bond. Take off these two hydrogens, I could have a triple bond there. That would be the equivalent of erasing these, have a triple bond, and a triple bond there. Now see, the only thing that matters is that you can count four bonds around every carbon. One, two, three, four. And those bonds can be shared. Now, I look at this carbon and I can see one, two, three, four bonds. And this carbon, I see three out to the hydrogens and then a fourth one there. So the whole trick in this writing of chemical formulas in the world of organic chemistry is to see to it that you have four bonds around every carbon atom. Oftentimes single bonds, sometimes double bonds, sometimes even triple bonds. Double bonds are often called the ethylene linkage. Triple bonds, that's double, triple bonds are called acetylenic. Linkage. Now bonds are sort of like springs that tie atoms together. They tie the atom together, hold them together. When you have two bonds, it's stronger than a single bond and pulls the atoms closer together. The distance between carbon atoms in a hydrocarbon is somewhere around 1.54 times 10 to the minus 8 centimeters. Do you honor students understand scientific notation? Some of you do. It's just a measure of a distance if we need to get to it. Well, let me hold up your hand, those who do not understand scientific notation. All right. Well, you don't be embarrassed about it. You're the young lady who hasn't had any chemistry. Isn't that true? The rest of these people, most of them have had. The new calculators on the market that everybody's going to be carrying around someday will use the so-called scientific notation. So just as a special assignment for you, go to an encyclopedia as a starting point and look up the word. Scientific notation. It's just a way of expressing. It's a shorthand way of avoiding using a large number of zeros in expressing
numbers.
Now, you might find, if you can't find it in an encyclopedia, an ordinary encyclopedia, but I think nowadays you could, go in the science library and look in a scientific encyclopedia or a mathematics, an encyclopedia of mathematics. Now, when you have a double bond, this distance shortens. And I am shorter. And for a triple bond, it is shorter yet, still shorter distance. You can regard those bonds as springs, just holding them, the atoms together. And if there are more springs pulling them, they'll come closer together. Now, in corn oil, there are hydrocarbon parts that make up corn oil, and there are these double bonds. The more double bonds there are, the greater the unsaturation. And when they say that a fat or an oil is polyunsaturated, the word poly in this case just means many double bonds. Well, there aren't really all that many, but they use the word anyway. Polyunsaturated means there's more than one double bond present in the hydrocarbon chain linkage of what corn oil is. Now, we can't get to telling you exactly what corn oil is yet until we get through this functional group business and talk about some things related to polymers. So we're still working towards that goal. Okay, now let's get some more functional groups listed here on the board. CN is called the cyanide group. See, these groups often involve more than one atom. Now, actually, there's a triple bond in here between the carbon and the nitrogen. But in shorthand notation, we will usually not show that. We'll just say the CN group is the cyanide functional group. The amide group is like this, a double bond to an oxygen, and then an NH2. Now you see that's something like this group. Remember I wrote that one as a carbon off to a double bond and then to an OH. So an amide is something like this carboxylic acid, except it has a carbon double bond to oxygen. But in place of the OH group, it has the NH2 group.
A question.
Okay.
The commonly used cyanide poison, is that what is it got besides the cyanide group?
Well, if you go to the gas chamber, they use HCN on you, hydrogen cyanide. Hydrogen cyanide, or sometimes called hydrocyanic acid, sometimes, because when dissolved in water, it will give a weak acid. This is extremely poisonous, and only a few sniffs of that will completely upset your central nervous system so it doesn't function properly. Many poisonous insects have organic compounds which contain the cyanide group. And the organic compound is such that when the snake, for example, injects it into your system, the organic compound breaks down and releases HCN or a salt of that, sodium cyanide. The element sodium replacing the hydrogen. This stuff is poisonous too. Or potassium cyanide. These things will kill you rather rapidly. I have known one person who killed themselves with this. I used to work at the Bureau of Mines in Salt Lake City back in 1940. Oh, I guess around 1942 for a year or so while I was working on a master's degree. And then after the war, I worked there again. And our librarian, I've forgotten her name now, and I can still see her face, found out she had cancer growth on her foot. And they used to drink tea at coffee break time, and she went to the chem lab and got some potassium cyanide and poured it in her tea and drank it, almost like that. I don't know why she, cancer on her foot probably could have been cured, cut off. But anyway, it upset her so that she killed herself by putting some potassium cyanide in her tea. Now the cyanide group is not always poisonous. It depends on what it's tied to. What it's tied to back here may be a hydrocarbon, but there may be some other functional groups on these. Organic molecules get very complicated. You all know what almond flavor is like, don't you? There's a cyanide group in that flavoring. Now it depends on how it's bound up. Now, it won't hurt you, the almond flavor, at least not in the quantities that we normally eat it. Almonds contain it, and apricot pits contain it. You ever eaten apricot pits? They're just as good as almonds. But don't eat peach pits. Don't eat peach pits. Peach pits also contain that. A cyanide, but it's bound up differently organically. And if you eat it, it gets released in your system as hydrogen cyanide, and it will kill you. Now, it's possible. My mother used to can peaches with the and leave the pit in sometimes. It really gives it a nice, distinctive flavor. And apparently that's safe. There are lots of people who do that. Because if the pit, I guess the pit's intact and not enough stuff gets dissolved out. If you were to use a cracked pit, I don't know whether enough stuff would get out or not. But if you actually break the pit open and eat that pit, you could get pretty sick. And if you eat a lot of them, it could kill you.
What about
thiocyanate? Well, most chemicals are poison if taken in sufficient quantity. Thiocyanate is relatively safe. I don't think it would hurt you. When I look back at my chemical career and look at all the things that I used to taste and smell and stick my hands into when I was younger and curious, I'm glad I'm still alive. But back in those days, we didn't have safety engineers to be watching us all the time. Companies have to be very conscious. There's hardly a chemical on the shelf that isn't poison if you want to really be strict about it. And with the new government regulations, OSHA and EPA and all the rest of them, they're making it almost impossible for you to operate. Got to keep the chemicals locked up and have to, the chemical storeroom man has to log out how many grams you took. And, it's not that bad here at BYU, but companies are facing with so much in the way of restrictions and protections that can't get anything done. It's overdone. You know life is a risk. It wouldn't be exciting if you didn't have some risk. And anybody who makes a go of it in life usually takes some risks. But, some of these government agencies, they're going to protect you from the cradle to the grave so you can't hurt yourself or can't hurt anybody else. You've probably seen the cartoon about what OSHA would do to a cowboy, haven't you? Have you ever seen that cartoon? I've seen them several places, but I never picked one up, eh? If OSHA should decide to protect the cowboy and all the things they put on the horse, you know, keep him from falling off, and all a million, it's really hilarious. There are some things that are just sort of naturally dangerous. You use your good sense and hope you survive, but taking a little bit of chance.
Are they going to change mountains so they're not as dangerous for mountain climbing?
Well, they would if they could. They're just that class of people. I suppose I'm sort of, you'll smell my politics when you get rid of this course. Just too many do-gooders going to do good for everybody. It's like the Doctrine and Covenant says, give a little man a little authority and he really takes off, you know. That's the way it is. And in government it's bad because your rank, you know, your grade number, GS so-and-so in civil service, is always based on how many men you have working for you. So the pyramid in government is, that's why government grows so big. How much money you make and how much prestige you have depends on the pyramid under you. How many men there are down at the bottom that you're responsible for. If you're responsible for only 100, then your pay cannot rise above a certain place, but if you can... So that's why everybody tries to keep building the organizations, and it just pyramids on itself because of the system. It's that way in many institutions other than government. It's just the idea that a guy is more important and worth more if he stands at the top of that size pyramid other than if he stands at the top of this size pyramid. Well, back to functional groups. There's one called aldehyde. That's this group here. Again, it's two double bond to an oxygen and then just a hydrogen. See, these are related. Amide has an NH2. This one has a hydrogen. Carboxylic acid has an OH. Now, there are a lot more functional groups. Chemists just have pages and pages of functional groups. And these things give unique reactivity to hydrocarbons. It's sort of like, here's the snake, and it's sort of passive except for up there at the mouth where the fangs are. And that's the way with hydrocarbons. We'll have a long chain hydrocarbon, and depending what is here in the way of a functional group, there'll be certain properties, and this is the chemically reactive part of the hydrocarbon. Hydrocarbons are fairly inert. Waxes will burn. Hydrocarbons tend to be waxy when they get heavy. I meant to bring some other things other than this polyethylene. This is polyethylene foam. This is getting a little bit ahead of our story. Let's talk about hydrocarbons again just for a minute. We'll backtrack. We named hydrocarbons up to about 10 carbon atoms long. If there's one carbon atom, we have natural gas. If there are two carbon atoms, you remember, fully saturated, you have what we call ethylene. And there's a little of that in natural gas. If there are three, we call it ethane. Methane, our natural gas, ethane, propane, which is used in campers, and four carbon atoms. We have butane, which is used in campers and for torches and whatnot. And from about 5 up to 10, we have gasolines. And if the carbon atoms run from around 10, then in the gasolines, they're the heavier ones, are diesel oils. I suppose diesel fuels may run from 10 to 13 or 14. I'd say diesel fuels. And then you get up maybe 14 to 18, they'd be the oils, like you put in your, when you add oil to your engine. Then you, these dividing points will depend on the temperature, and they're a little bit arbitrary. But you get up around 24 carbon atoms, and you have waxes. Now, have you seen the paraffin wax your mother puts on the top of the jelly, pours it on hot to protect it? That has about 24 carbon atoms long. So see, you go from gases through liquids, and finally you get to solids. Now, in nature, there are some plants that make wax-like substances, and you may get up as high as maybe 48. Well, these waxes get higher and higher melting, and they get properties such that they're stronger. Now, beyond somewhere around 50, you do not find hydrocarbons longer than that in nature. But man has learned how to make longer hydrocarbons by a process that he calls polymerization. Polymerization. And you see this word is related to this word, polymer. Things that have been polymerized, we call polymers. Now, you are certainly familiar with the most common of all plastics, which is polyethylene. That's a hydrocarbon, and it's a real long one. And you may have as many as 5,000 or more carbon atoms in the chain, a very long snake-like thing. In fact, it's possible to make them with a couple of 100,000 carbon atoms, all in a long chain. So you sort of have a hair, you see, of atomic dimensions, just a really long thing. Now, these chains do not spread out long unless you do special things to them. They tend to coil like a gigantic snake, just all mixed up in a tremendous coil. As a matter of fact, they can even make them larger than that. I think that they have succeeded in making polyethylenes, which are just carbon, hydrocarbons in big, tremendously long chains that are over a couple of million carbon atoms in a row. Now, the properties of the polyethylene depend to a great extent on how long those chains are. Now, in the films and whatnot, I think they're a couple of 100,000 as a rule. Now, they also make fibers out of these things. Most fiber substances, even those that are naturally occurring, contain carbon atoms, sometimes mixed with oxygen atoms and other things, not pure hydrocarbons in nature. But they're very long chains, and those are the things that make our fiber. All our cloth and whatnot, whether it's man-made or synthetic, or whether it's something like wool, the things that are fibers tend to be carbon atoms, sometimes mixed in with other atoms, that go on for thousands of atoms in a long, linear kind of a molecule. This molecule, as I mentioned, though, will coil around, but it'll generally tend to have this linear kind of a thing. Now, this sample of polyethylene that I'm about to show you today is a very interesting polyethylene in that it's made of bubbles. What they do is heat the polyethylene hot enough to melt. And you can do that, even though you may have a couple of 100,000 atoms long. You can heat the polyethylene until you melt it. And then you know how a youngster will blow bubbles with a clay pipe, with soap films and whatnot? Well, they know how to do that with liquid polyethylene. So they blow bubbles, and they run the air through at the right size, so you get bubbles that are very, very tiny. And while the bubbles are still just a little bit sticky, they collect them all together, and you end up with this stuff. So that has very tiny bubbles. It looks like it might be a sponge, but a sponge can be regarded as bubbles with interconnecting holes. In other words, it'll soak up water. You squeeze it, you see, and since all these little holes are interconnected, water can be sopped up as the thing tries to regain its shape. Now, man can make sponges, or he can make this cellular thing where there are no holes. And for some purposes, you want the sponge-like thing. And for other purposes, you want the holes so they won't pick up any water. So you see, this would make a very good lifesaver kind of thing. Polyethylene in and of itself will float. Just a pure sheet of polyethylene film. You try it sometime. You put it on the tub or the wash basin. It's not as dense as water and it will float. But here you fill little bubbles full of air and the bubbles are all joined together. So that makes a marvelous cushion for floating and for many other kinds of purposes. And it's light. This would make a good insulation for your house, except that it's not fireproof. They do have ways of fireproofing some of these materials. They can not only form this polymer known as polyethylene. This is pure hydrocarbon, just carbon and hydrogen, plus a few other things, but they're there in minor constituents that are necessary for carrying out the polymerization and making it froth up properly and blowing the bubbles and whatnot.
Okay? What's the reason for the ethylene?
Well,
let's tell you right now, this is a pretty good place to do that. Let's learn how to name hydrocarbons that contain one double bond. With CH4, if we take away a couple of hydrogens to get a double bond, you'd have to have two bonds to itself, and it can't do that. So there's nothing there. But we move up to the next hydrocarbon, which we call ethane. Ethane. Take away two hydrogens, and then this bond goes there. We'll rewrite that, CH2, just our shorthand, indicating two double bond, or a double bond between the two carbons. And then two hydrogens on each carbon in addition. We have to know how to name this. That's ethane when it's saturated. When it's unsaturated, we call it ethylene. Now let's go to the next thing, which is normally propane, three carbon atoms. We put a double bond in there, and we call it propene. You understand that there are hydrogens there. I'm just speeding things up. And a chemist will leave these other hydrogens off. See, there have to be four bonds to every carbon, so there'd be two hydrogens on that. And there have to be four bonds here, so there'd be one hydrogen on that carbon, and then out here there'd be three. You just shorthand that. If I call it a hydrocarbon and write it like that, you understand that it has hydrogens on like that. Now let's go to the next one. Four carbon atoms. If there's a double bond, it's called, instead of butane, it's called butene. But now some complications arise. Maybe the double bond isn't there, but it's in the middle. And that's a different compound with different properties. Now, if they use the word just butene, you'll understand that the double bond is there. But if they say 2-butene, it means, and they put a dash here, 2-butene, it means that the second carbon atom is where you'll find the double bond. So you'll call this the first carbon atom, the second, the third, and the fourth. So it'd be 2-butene for that. But if the double bond were either there or there, then you'd call it butene. All right, now we could have a double bond here and a double bond there on the first one. So you could call that one. See, that's doubly unsaturated. Remember, you can't have two double bonds together. They have to be separated by a single bond. We could call this 1,4-butene. Or you could call it 1,3, which I think would be more common. Anyway, you see, it indicates that beginning with carbon 1, there's a double bond. Beginning with carbon 3, there's a double bond. An organic chemist would know that the double bond were not back that way. I don't want to get you involved with a lot of this difficult nomenclature, but we'll stop with about that much. Question here.
Exactly, why can't you have two double bonds on a carbon?
The thing will decompose if you could ever make it. Nobody's ever succeeded in making it. It just requires too high an energy and would be unstable.
Just and it's too coming back.
A chemist would say it's thermodynamically unstable. When you can't make something. A chemist says it's thermodynamically unstable. Now, if you ask the real question why, that's hard to answer. Organic chemistry is an art. It has grown up over a period of a couple of hundred of years. And then men try to explain why these things are so. There's very little that has been predicted in advance in the field of organic chemistry. It's grown up as an art. But if you ask the ultimate question why, it's very difficult to answer. The chemist will hide in in sophisticated knowledge which he has in the field of thermodynamics and use the expression that I just used, which is thermodynamically unstable. But if you keep pushing further, you have to finally arrive and say, well, that's the way the Lord made it. That's all you can say. You just can't get any further than that. Now, there'll be some chemists who'll try and screw it again and complain that it's real scientific, you know. But they all have questions you just never can answer in science. You can't. You can answer it in the framework of 8 years of knowledge getting a PhD in chemistry of correlations and theories and propositions, and a framework that's been built up, and explain them in that artificial framework which correlates the facts and relates them. And that's all we do in science. The newspapers usually misinterpret science all over the place and talk of scientific knowledge and things like that. And I guess we do too as scientists. But you should remember that there's really no ultimate knowledge. It's a correlation. Science is a correlation of the facts. And if you get enough of those observed facts in your head and know the various laws of one, now you can't predict what will happen. But to answer the ultimate questions of how come the atom behaves this way, you can't say. You really can't say. If we go up to 5 carbon atoms, then this is let's see, what's 5? Pentene. If there's a double bond with the first carbon atom. And then you get into this complicated numerical nomenclature where you use numbers to indicate which carbon atom has the double bond. All right, now, this one right here, the ethylene, is the most versatile organic chemistry in the chemical industry anywhere in the world. And this substance is polymerized to form long chains. The source of this substance is petroleum. It is not present to a large extent in the crude oil. But when they crack the crude oil to make gasoline, they get enormous quantities of ethylene formed. Then this ethylene gas that they get is the basis of the entire plastics industry. Well, not the entire. Probably 85% of the plastics industry is based on the polymerization of this gaseous substance called ethylene. How does one polymerize ethylene? Let's do an imaginary polymerization apart from the facts of what may cause it. I will write a bunch of ethylene molecules close together. I'll leave the hydrogens off. Maybe I had better leave the hydrogens off. I'll put them down here. Well, I'll put them out like this. And so on. Chemists use catalysts which are black magic ingredients, sometimes things like platinum, which is a catalyst in your exhaust to help pollution in the automobile engine. Catalysts are used in a million and one things. He also uses temperature. He usually raises the temperature to a higher value above room temperature. And he uses pressure. as things that he can do to chemical systems to make things take place. Now, the all-important thing is the catalyst. And most catalysts have been discovered by trial and error. It's just black witchcraft. Now, there are theories of why catalysts will do certain things. My theories are getting pretty good now. But in the main, it's a practical art. In the presence of a catalyst, and at the right temperature, and at the right pressure, both of these being elevated above room condition, pressures used are about 2,000 atmospheres. Now, the pressure of air on our bodies at sea level is 1 atmosphere. And how many pounds per square inch is 1 atmosphere of pressure? 14.7, or about 15. You go up to 2,000 times that, and you go to a temperature of around 250 degrees centigrade, and you use the right kind of a catalyst. And the class of catalysts that will work are things that are called peroxides. Have you ever heard of peroxide blondes? Most of you know the formula for water, H2O. There is a substance containing hydrogen and oxygen that has the formula H2O2. See, two atoms of oxygen rather than one. This is hydrogen peroxide. Now, hydrogen peroxide is not used pure. It's a liquid, just like water is, and it's hard to get pure.